Why did God have us traverse all those miles across the mountains all those days with 13 of us total, 15 including Dave and Alyssa, to minister to one man and his wife and one child? And I kept thinking about this, thinking, okay, did we fail in some way? Did we do something wrong? Is there something that we could have done better so that we could come back and give a better report? Right? Because even talking with Adam, Adam was saying, yeah, we haven't been on step trips where just one child shows up. That seems odd. And again, in my mind, as Adam said, we do a VBS here, and 35, 40 kids is typical. So I wrestled, legitimately, I confess to you, I wrestled with this all week long. Is there something that we did wrong? Because I didn't want to come back and report, hey, we spent all this time and money and one child. And the more I thought about this, the more I contemplated, prayed about it, when we serve God, oftentimes what happens is we expect to see fruit now. As we serve God, as we minister, our human mind expects to see results. We get focused on this idea of these, we have our own personal expectations of what we want, how we want to see it play out. And unfortunately, I think that actually distracts us in ministry, in service. How many times have, for instance, have you invited your neighbor or invited a coworker or a friend or a family member to church and they said they'd come, but they didn't? How many times have you witnessed to a friend or a family member or a neighbor or a coworker and they seem to understand the gospel, but they won't accept it? And what happens is we get distracted because we're not getting the result, the outcome that we want, that we have envisioned. And really what I truly see is then this fresh opportunity for Satan to come in and distract us and then bring discouragement into our lives because things aren't happening the way we were hoping for. All good things. Right? We want to invite our friends to church. We want to witness to them, share the gospel. We want to see a good result. There's nothing wrong with that. But then we get discouraged when something doesn't go the way we envisioned it. And I stand before you today, church, admitting that I had a different expectation, a different vision, shall we say, of how I wanted the week to go out in Colorado. And it didn't happen, and I was discouraged because of it. And I had to confess that, and I had to admit to God that suddenly I took what I wanted and I usurped God's authority, God's will, and told God what I expected. And I was reminded of a passage in Galatians. Can we go to Galatians 6 tonight? You ever read through Scripture and as you're studying one book, you're like, man, this is my favorite book of the whole Bible. And then you move on to another book and you start studying that. You're like, this is my favorite book of the, now it's my favorite book. And I'm doing that with Galatians right now. Galatians is just a tremendous book. I love this book of the Bible, the emphasis on grace in the book of Galatians. But when we think about this phrase from William Carey, attempt great things from God, expect great things from God. I think what ends up happening is we end up taking that second phrase, expect great things from God, and we start putting our idea of what that outcome looks like. And we say, all right, God, I'm going to serve you, but make sure you give me this result. Make sure I get what I want. And what happens is I got discouraged. I allowed Satan to discourage me because I was telling God the end result. And so tonight we're going to look at, as we serve God, expectation versus reality. So what we're going to be looking at tonight for the next few minutes. What are you attempting for God, and what's your expectation versus what's reality? Because there's a phrase in Galatians 6, verse 9. We all know this verse, and let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. As we therefore have opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially unto them who are the household of faith. And folks, how many times do we serve God? As we serve and we get discouraged, tired, weary, asking ourselves, is it worth it? And that's the question I wrestled with All last week, while out in Colorado, all this past week as we were back home now, was it worth it? And as they begin to be reminded of this passage and study this passage out, let's walk through it, starting back in verse 1, and see our expectation versus reality when we serve God. So first of all, the first thing we see is our responsibility. Verse 1, "Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such as one, in the spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted. Bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ." First thing we see here, the first command, as a church, our responsibility is to be a church body, not a church of individuals. The command in verse 2 to bear one another's burdens, most certainly it does involve, in part, the confrontation of verse 1, but the admonition to bear one another's burdens, it's too broad to narrowly focus it on verse 1. So we got to keep that in mind. Yes, verse 1 talks about how we should, in a loving, in a spirit of meekness, confront one another when we see sin, when we see that there are issues. Also take note of the phrase, "ye which are spiritual," right? Consider thyself. Are you the spiritual one? Are you able to confront someone? It doesn't say if there's someone overtaken in fault, complain about it. Gossip about it. I would make the case that if you're gossiping or complaining about it, maybe you're not the spiritual one to do the confronting. But as we see, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted, bear ye one another's burdens. We as a church body here in Roscoe, Illinois, we have a responsibility towards one another, to love one another, to support one another. In our culture as Americans, we have this idea of individualism, where every person is different, they're unique, make sure you focus on their person. I mean, the Olympics are going on right now. And what better example of individualism than the Olympics, where you distinguish certain individuals for certain things that they're doing. And so our culture, it's hard for us as Christians to understand this idea of being a church body, not individuals, because we're Americans. And yet we have this clear command to bear one another's burdens, to go alongside one to somebody else, to follow the example of Christ, to support one another. So when it says bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ, this isn't the law of the Old Testament. This isn't the law that we are bound to, as Paul talks in other places, by chains where we're bound to the law. This law is more the idea of the example of Christ. So as we bear one another's burdens, as we serve, as we love one another, as we do that, we are fulfilling Christ's example. We are following Him. Honestly, we can't truly understand the burdens of one another unless you sacrifice yourself. Unless you take the time to get close to them, to understand what they're going through. So that when the weight's on your shoulders, it means you have to listen to them, ask questions, hear what's going on in their life, see how you can help them. This means that there are times there will be physical, there will be emotional, there will be spiritual draining, a burden on you because you are fulfilling the law of Christ, the example of Christ, by understanding what your brother or sister is going through. It may take time. It could be very uncomfortable, maybe awkward at times. But when we understand that we as believers, it's a less of a load when it's carried by two than when it's just by one person alone. Folks, I don't think we do enough of this bearing of the burdens of one another. And so as we understand how we're supposed to bear the burdens of one another, how we're supposed to help and encourage one another, again, let's broaden it out. When we hear other believers, not just here in the church, do we bear their burdens? We have brothers and sisters in Christ across the globe. We have brothers and sisters in Christ in Montrose, Colorado. And we heard of a burden and we wanted to help them. We wanted to encourage them. But then in verse 3, the first command was we want to be a church body, not a church of individuals. The second command here that we see is that we don't want to bear burdens for the wrong reason. Now again, that sounds odd. So well, how could you put yourself through pain and uncomfort for the wrong reason? Well, Paul gives us some reasons, so let's look at them, right? Verse 3, for if a man thinketh himself to be something when he is nothing, he deceiveth himself. So it's human tendency to look at what is it in it for me? What can I get out of it? And I admit, as we went out to Colorado, I was looking forward to having a tremendous VBS, being able to come back and report and say, there were 25 kids at this church, and the church grew, they grew out of their building in 1 week of VBS because we were out there. Right? I'm bearing the burdens of someone else, but I was doing it for the wrong reasons. And so as we understand that, too many times we're in it for what's in it for me, not truly serving and bearing someone else's burden out of love. And Paul has this stark warning in verse 3. And it's what we tell the teenagers, teen guys all the time especially, right? For if a man thinketh himself to be something when he is nothing, he deceiveth himself. Modern day vernacular, Paul's saying you're not as cool as you think you are. And folks, too often what we do is we give ourselves more credit than we deserve when truly we would not be able to even bear our own burdens, the understanding of what God gives to us in life if it wasn't apart from God's grace. So as we serve, as we bear each other's burdens, are we doing it for the wrong reason? Christ himself said in John 15 that without him we can't do anything. So we can't bear the burdens of others when we're doing it out of selfishness. And this warning here is a stark warning that if you are trying to help someone out of selfishness to get recognized, to get your own glory, then that's actually sin. Because you're taking credit for something when you fail to realize that we're nothing without the grace of God. But it's interesting that this verse then, as we move on, it's not the pride of superiority, but it's actually a warning against conceit. It's a warning against comparing ourselves with others. And Paul answers that then in verse 4, because what he says to do is instead of doing it for the wrong reason, make sure you're testing your own actions, making sure you're assessing the opportunities that you have, make sure you're doing it in accordance to what God has for you. It's truly just looking in the mirror. It's a test against ourselves. Because verse 4 says, but let every man approve his own work, and then he shall have rejoicing in himself alone, not in another. Now, this is one of those where our red flags go up, right? Rejoicing in yourself? Was Paul at a high altitude and out of oxygen as well? Like, this makes no sense, because he's just, throughout the book, he's talking about grace, God's grace, and it's how only because of God's grace, and then he says you should rejoice in yourself and not another. And here what Paul is reminding us that he's saying, do you understand the gravity, the weight of what God's given to you, not other people? Do you understand that you are accountable for yourself, not other people? It doesn't matter what job the pastor asks you to do or to assign someone else. Have you been faithful in what God's given to you? It's this idea of comparing ourselves with others. When you're in VBS, honestly, what's the coolest job you could have in VBS is to be a puppeteer, right? That's behind the curtain, making up the voice, being silly. So what happens when the pastor gives somebody else the job of the puppeteer and not you? Do you tell God, God, I could have served by being a puppeteer. I could have done fine. And Pastor Caleb goes and wrecks my ability. So what happens is we start comparing ourselves, telling God what I expect God to do with my talents. I tell God how I want to be used. So then when we're called to prove our works, we ask ourselves that reason for which we are working. Because God's not opposed to work. We don't gain our salvation through works. We don't earn our salvation through works. But we certainly prove our salvation through works. We prove our dedication, our loyalty, our service to Christ by how we work. So when I tell God, God, this is what I expect, this is how I want to be used, this is what my idea of being in service is, what's happened is I have now usurped God's authority. I have undercut God's nature of grace as to why I serve in the first place. So as we desire to serve, as we've been given this commandment to serve, do we do it for the right reason? Again, I wanted to tell God what the week was going to look like out in Montrose. I wanted to tell God how many kids we were going to have. I wanted to be a magnificent blessing to Pastor Zeechlog by, again, having all these kids come in, and it's just, it's a revival in the church, and you never, this church has never seen anything like it. I had those thoughts. So what happened was, I started telling God how I wanted things to work, and I was doing it for the wrong reason. Because then what happens is, even we as believers, as we look to what we're doing, how we're trying to serve God, there is this temptation to have competition, right? Well, this step trip was in the dumps compared to other step trips, because other step trips, we've had lots of kids. This one, we didn't. Even in churches, in ministries, it's easy to fall into the temptation of comparing ourselves with other ministries, other churches. The Grace Baptist Church in Montrose, as Adam said, there are about 10 members there. Right on the other side of town was a very large conservative church, Victory Baptist. Pastor Shannon was the assistant pastor there, the youth pastor for many years. That church, they average over 100 kids every summer for VBS. So how is it that one church across the city, just a 10-minute drive away, can have 100 kids, and then we only had one kid throughout the week? It was discouraging. I let my idea of how I wanted to serve God get in the way. And we started comparing. I started saying, God, you can do it in one church. Why not this one? But the instruction here, then in verse 5, for every man shall bear his own burden, understanding that I alone give account for what I am doing for Christ. On the day of judgment, or the day of reward, shall we call it, when God asks you why you have done what you've done. He doesn't get to ask me, he doesn't get to say, you know, Pastor Caleb, you compared to Adam, you know, you were pretty pathetic in this area. God doesn't compare us. God doesn't hold me up to a light of someone else. But I'm accountable for what I've done. And so this idea of bearing other people's burdens and then bearing our own burdens, it really goes right in line. Bearing other people's burdens has this idea of coming alongside of them, supporting them, loving them, sacrificing myself to know how I can serve someone else. But then bearing my own burdens is that I have to give an account of what I've done. I am responsible for it. I'm not responsible for the way somebody else reacts. I'm not responsible for comparing myself with someone else. So when we're tempted to take credit for someone else's service, as it says in verse 3 and 4, when we're tempted to be recognized, when we're tempted to compare ourselves, understand that God has given you a task, has given you an area that He wants you to serve in, and He asks that you be faithful in it. And that's oftentimes, as I said, it's hard for us as believers because our human nature is just to compare. I want to know how I'm doing compared to somebody else. Again, Olympics, right? Comparing two people versus against each other. But in light of understanding this idea of what our command is, of how we are supposed to serve others, how we're supposed to obey God, there are temptations along the way. We've spoken of some of them here. But let's go on as we jump over then to verse number 7. Be not deceived, God is not mocked. For whatever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. So first of all was our responsibility. Secondly, we see here, we see the temptation. This phrase, be not deceived, is an imperative, right? That means a command to do something. It's not a suggestion. It's not a, hey, be careful. It's don't be deceived. We as believers, we have the ability to know when temptation is there. And according to Scripture, we have no choice but to fight, with God's help, fight that temptation. The temptation that Paul was warning in verse 7 was against false teachers, the Judaizers. They were insisting that there were still other parts to the gospel besides just grace. But Paul was saying here that we can take the warning even further. We can take the warning and understand the principle that we still have the ability to be deceived. We have the ability to be tempted. And so in this idea of our service for God, as we seek to serve and live our lives for God, what is this temptation that he's talking about? Well, first of all, we see that there is a temptation to do it ourselves. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. It's pretty easy to rely on myself. It's pretty easy to think that I've got it figured out. Again, when we arrived on Saturday, we made a plan with Pastor Zichlog. Pastor Zichlog had done mailings throughout the last several weeks. We went out Sunday evening, I should say, and we hit up dozens of houses handing out flyers. Not kidding, right across the street from the church, there was a house, and there were several kids playing out there. So Sunday evening, myself and a couple other people walked over there and just wanted to invite them. There were three or four kids out there. And we handed them the flyer and said, hey, we're going to have VBS this week. We'd love to invite you. Starts at 9:30 in the morning. Love to see you out there. And they, not kidding, directly across from the church. And they said, wait, where's this at? Right there, across the street. Again, not kidding. Oh, that's a church? Right, so they seemed excited. The kids wanted to go. I told one little boy, I think he was 7 or 8 years old. I handed him a flyer and said, "Hey, you have friends you can invite too, right?" And he goes, "Yeah, but not Ben. He's mean." So he already had in his mind he's going to invite all his friends except for Ben. Not this Ben, different Ben. He said, "Yeah, I'm not going to invite Ben because Ben's mean." So the kids wanted to come. We handed all these flyers. We invited people. Pastor Shannon, again, he works in construction. So one of his contractors, someone that does his foundations for him. The cement truck driver said, yeah, I've got kids. I'll bring them this week. Gave him his word. Through another scenario, pastor talked to somebody else that had connections to the church. They had three kids. Said, yeah, we'll bring our kids this week. For sure. So we did all of in ourselves, we did as much as we could. If we were to rely on ourselves, say we invited people and we promoted this, the VBS. And then we had one kid show up. So as we do it ourselves, then the temptation is then to get discouraged when we're not getting the results that we want. Things aren't going to plan. And again, we start to compare ourselves with other people's, with other ministries. Again, Victory Baptist Church, right across on the other side of the city, they have over 100 kids attend. This is a town of 25, 30,000 people. Why couldn't we have more than one kid? We begin asking God why. We begin saying, God, you're not answering our prayer requests. We're praying for all these kids and you're not answering it. Do you not care? Why aren't our prayer requests being answered? What happens is then we begin to sow the thoughts of our own abilities, of our own strength, of our own desires for outcomes. Because verse 8, for he that soweth to his flesh shall the flesh reap corruption, but he that soweth to the Spirit shall reap the Spirit life, shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. In that first part of the verse, we begin to sow, if we're not careful, as we minister, as we seek.